Coming up on our 100th episode of The Social Hour, it is a star-studded event, people. We've got Instagram, we've got Foursquare, Vimeo. Who invited Groupon? All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 100, recorded February 28th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Warby Parker Eyewear. Get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at revolutionary prices. For a free home try-on of 5 stylish frames of your choice, plus special expedited delivery, go to warbyparker.com and use the code SOCIALHOUR. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Social Hour, but not just any episode. This is a very, very special 100th episode of The Social Hour. And from Twit World headquarters in Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I'm so excited that it's our 100th episode. It's amazing. I feel like it's just flown by, Sarah.
I know.
100 episodes.
I know. 100 episodes. Well, you figure, I mean, there's what we do, a roughly 50 shows a year, give or take. And yeah, it really has flown by. It seems like just yesterday I was still filling in for you or Leo every once in a while on Net at Night, which is sort of what The Social Hour evolved from. And it's been a lot of fun. And luckily, each week, there's so much stuff to talk about.
That, I know. You know,
the world of social is, it's a pretty broad term these days, but it gives us a lot to talk about.
Yeah, it's just never ending. You know, I feel like we could do this show every single day. I'm not suggesting that we do that, but I feel like there's enough content.
You got somewhere else to be, or you know. Yeah. Let's do another daily show. That sounds great.
Exactly. That's all you need, right, Sarah? But there is that much content. It's amazing that there's always so many stories. And, you know, just when people say to me, you know, social media is kind of dying down, or, you know, they think that it's dying off a little bit, I feel like it just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. There's always great stories in the headlines, and today is no exception. We have a lot.
Yeah. Do people really say, Amber, do you think social media is winding down?
Well, I feel like people want to kill anything that is kind of growing and there's that momentum there. So people do say that to me. They're like, oh, social's dead. You know, people don't care, blah, blah, blah. Facebook is dead, whatever it might be. But if you actually look at how many people continue to use these tools, how many companies continue to try to figure out how to use them and are just kind of testing the waters and innovating. I mean, we're still in really early days. Like, none of this is going away.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's all about companies trying to figure out what's the best use of our time. Well, and individuals as well. I mean, just being on social media doesn't help anybody. It's, you know, what's your strategy? What do you expect to get out of it? Are you having fun? You know, what's your rate of return type of a thing? So, yes, we do have, for our 100th episode, we have quite a few awesome socially related stories, starting with another bit of a milestone.
Yes, Instagram. So I know, I was like, you would think after 100 episodes, I'd figure out when you were throwing to me. And I was like, it was so smooth.
Oh, we're running a tight ship here. That's okay.
I know. Instagram hits 100 million active users. You know, when I read this headline, Sarah, I was thinking back to the first time I used Instagram. And believe it or not, I remember. I wonder if you remember your first time using Instagram. And I was in Los Angeles and I was writing a story about it for our national newspaper. And I was playing around with the app. And the first thing that went through my mind, because I took a picture of myself, I was sitting by the pool. I had no makeup on. And all I kept thinking when I added the filter was, oh my gosh, this is amazing because I can take away all of like the bags under my eyes because I can have these great filters. And it was just kind of a fun experience. You know, not that many people on it. And now 100 million active users. It's just phenomenal.
Wow. And that's for anybody who's like, well, what constitutes an active user? Somebody that uses Instagram at least once a month. So monthly active users, 100 million. That's huge, but not surprising. I mean, Instagram caught on from day one. It's funny, Amber, that you remember your first gram, because I don't. I mean, I could go back and find it. I've posted so many photos, it would probably take me a few pages to get back there.
But yeah, no, I'm with you. I just I posted a photo from the hair salon where I was sort of like under the heating lights and I looked horrible. And you know, add enough filters and you look less horrible.
I know. Now
that's
I'm worried.
Why I like them.
I want to go back and check to make sure that I'm right about that first Instagram picture, but I'm pretty sure that I'm right about that one. I do remember just kind of diving into it, trying to figure out, you know, why this tool was going to be so popular. And, you know, the funny thing is, if I look at how many photos I've posted, even though I consider myself an active user, I mean, it's nothing like Twitter. I've only posted 253 photos on Instagram, and I've been on since the early days. So the nice thing about it, I think, I don't know if you feel the same way, Sarah, is I don't feel that pressure like Twitter to constantly be posting. It's more of a casual tool in some ways.
I'm with you. I don't know if I've ever had like 2 weeks go by without adding something to Instagram, but certainly it's sort of like, you know, sometimes there's a lot of stuff to take photos of and sometimes I don't think about it. You know, it's it does seem like if you're not on Twitter for a week, people are like, what's wrong? Are you on vacation? Or, you know, you kind of feel like you need to be participating in the conversation. Instagram's not really like that. You know, it's none of my photos have anything to do with each other, really. It's not sort of like a running commentary of any kind.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I was right. It was definitely the first picture I took was in L.A., as I mentioned. And that was 124 weeks ago. A long time.
Wow.
But I know. Not a surprise, I guess. You know, it seems to me, I don't know if you felt this, like even in the past month, everyone I talk to all of a sudden, you know, they're just jumping onto Instagram. You know, even companies I know that run restaurants or hair salons, they're finally thinking, you know what, I think I have to get on Instagram. It's almost like taking it longer to catch on, but the population of people on there is just continues to climb.
Well, and I keep hearing, and I'm not exactly sure how this works, but I keep hearing from people who have, you know, like teenage kids or from teenage kids like, oh, yeah, we don't even use Twitter. Twitter's just lame. Like, we're just on Instagram. It's sort of like that is their Twitter because you can say a little something. I mean, you can make a photo caption longer than 140 characters, but it's a little bit of a you can use it sort of like a tweet, but then you always have a picture. And, you know, you hashtag it to death and there's all sorts of like weird hashtags on Instagram. I don't know. 100 million active users. That's pretty crazy. You know, another company, Amber, that is claiming a huge, huge number of users is Shazam, which, of course, Shazam, I think of as the app that lets me figure out what song is playing in a coffee shop. You know, if I don't recognize it on my own, you know, it processes the music and tells me what it is. But Shazam is quite a bit more than that as well. There, you know, you see Shazam showing up on commercials where it'll, you know, tell you like Shazam this and find out what song is playing in this commercial, that sort of thing. Also, they have TV partners now, so you can have Shazam running to figure out so it can pull information of what TV show you're watching or that sort of thing. Shazam says they have 300 million users now. That's not the same thing as monthly active users because 300 million users is all of the people who have ever tagged anything using Shazam. So, I mean, if I only used it once, I'm part of that 300 million users. So not quite the same thing. But at the same time, I mean, give or take a few people, that's at least a lot of people who have at least once used Shazam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about Shazam, I think when you compare it to other tools out there, is that Shazam is making money. I mean, I don't know if they're necessarily profitable, but there are people paying them for that service. And we haven't seen that same thing with other tools out there like Twitter to the same extent, I don't think. Interesting in this article saying that they have done more than 200 campaigns for over 140 brands. And the minimum price of a campaign is $75,000, running up to about $200,000. And obviously, just an interesting way, I think, to be able to use technology like this to get people excited about any type of brand trying to promote any type of product using this music. So I've always been a fan of Shazam. What about you, Sarah?
I like it too. I think that they're smart to deepen their partnerships with sort of their television counterparts for events like the Super Bowl or the Grammys or the Oscars. You know, Shazam can have custom polls, predictions, a reason to be active in that second screen experience. So it's not just about, hey, what's actually on? Why don't you analyze this audio data and tell me sort of thing. It's kind of that, I don't want to say it's gamifying the whole experience, but it's giving you something to do that's relevant to what you're watching. And we've talked in the past about how that whole second screen experience sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. But yeah, I mean, they've got some crazy stats. 20% of all iPhones in the U.S. used Shazam last month. That's according to Shazam's executive vice president of marketing, David Jones. He says in some European countries like France, Germany, and the U.K., closer to 30% or 40%, they're adding, they say, 2 million new users a week. Sometimes on a good week, more than 3 million. So huge growth opportunity for them. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see at what point Shazam becomes something, you know, where I still don't say, oh, it's how you figure out what song is playing at the coffee shop. Because that's still kind of how how I think of it, although it's so much more.
That's the thing about some of these social tools, though. I think that they definitely need that time to be able to mature. And I think with Shazam, we've seen that. You know, it's been a while since Shazam has been around. And so it'll be interesting as we watch. You know, I feel like we're at our 100th episode of the show. So it's just been fun to watch some of these companies over time. And some of them have died off. And then others have figured out a way to be profitable. So kind of fun to watch. In other news, Spotify, which I know a lot of people love, they have announced that they will be rolling out more social networking features. And in fact, kind of like a social network that will be for Spotify users based on having things like a follow tab. So easier to follow some of the users on Spotify. And I know they have some diehard fans that are going to love this.
Yeah, this is we talked about this on TNT this morning. And, you know, I, Amber, am not a regular Spotify user. I use it enough because I like to just feel like I understand, you know, what its new features are and how it differs from other streaming services, you know, just on a level where I can talk about it intelligently. But I don't use Spotify as much as my streaming service of choice, Artio, although they're very similar. Mm-hmm. In you know, their music collection and that sort of thing, because I've always thought that Artio had tackled social so much better. Spotify always seemed like it was lacking a little bit. You've got the Spotify Facebook interaction, but Artio does pretty much the same thing. I mean, anything I listen to on Artio, I'm sharing on my Facebook profile, for better or worse. Listen to a lot of Kesha, it's true. But yeah, so Spotify is adding a new followers tab. So it's giving you a little bit more information on, and by the way, if you're watching this and you're like, I don't have that, it's because it's rolling out to users. So it might take a little while for you to see that functionality. But, you know, it'll give you some information like, you know, what your friends are listening to, you know, if you're following an artist, that sort of thing, you know, new album information. It's kind of, you know, it's sort of an overview of what everyone else that you care about is doing on Spotify, which is great for discovery, obviously. I mean, if you listen to an album and I like you and I haven't heard that album, I'm much more likely to give it a shot because I think, well, Amber has good taste, you know, like we always seem to like the same music, you know, when we're on our road trips together, that type of a thing. So it seems like this is moving in the right direction, especially because it gives you one more reason to stay within that Spotify experience. What do you think, Amber?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think also what's interesting, and I mentioned this on the article from the Next Web, is the ability for users to potentially interact with artists. So I'm just reading one of the paragraphs here talking about how friends and musicians are now tightly integrated together and could potentially interact with each other. There are words here exactly saying recreate a bit of MySpace's old magic in the days that you could do something like that. But
gosh,
I think this
is
also
interesting.
Do they
even want to say MySpace?
I know. It hurts me. It pains me when they say that. And then I'm trying to think back to the early days of MySpace. And I guess that is true. You know, bands would go on there and they would actually connect with their fans, mm-hmm. you know, not a PR person, but the actual musician. And we need to see if this is also happening on services out there like Spotify. So I think all the social integration features make perfect sense for a service like this. And like you, Sarah, I actually don't use Spotify, but have been an Artio user too. But cool to see some of the stuff roll out for Spotify users.
Yeah, I think so too. And you make a good point. I mean, interacting with a band or a musician or an artist, that sort of thing, you know, that's very, very compelling. I don't do a lot of that on a service like Twitter, though, because I feel like often if I, let's say I love Lady Gaga, right? If I follow Lady Gaga on Twitter, often it's so sort of like out of left field from a lot of the other people that I'm following that aren't talking about music, that it feels like it doesn't fit. On a service like Spotify is clearly about music. So that's a perfect place to follow all the comings and goings of Lady Gaga. It seems like the context is there.
Just makes sense, yeah. And Sarah, I don't remember last week, did we talk about when Vimeo's app that they acquired, Echograph? Not sure if we had mentioned that on last week's show.
Well, I certainly talked about it on some show.
I know. That's my problem, too. I have the exact same problem. Anyway, if we didn't talk about it, I'm just mentioning it because I'm reading the next headline that we're going to talk about. And it seems like Vimeo has been in the news more on the social side.
Yeah.
I've spoken on other shows about Echograph, like Sarah has as well. A really cool app that allows you to erase the stillness in your images. And I won't go into details, but I'm a big fan of that. And now they've teamed up with, is it Vivoom, to add snazzy filters and effects to your videos.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is, I got to love Vimeo for this, because when Vine rolled out, Amber, a few weeks ago, or at least when it became public, my initial thing was, you know what, these videos are kind of crappy, and if you want to call it the Instagram a video, you're going to have to get yourself some cool filters. Now, there are obviously other apps that will allow you to take video and run it through some sort of filter, you know, a cartoon filter, or a, you know, old-timey filter, or that sort of thing. It's not as if that doesn't exist, but not really on these social networks that have all this hype. Vimeo teaming up with Vivoom to add filters to your videos is really smart, because Vimeo is already a place where people are posting a lot of high-quality videos, you know, creative stuff, music videos, kind of artsy-fartsy type of things. So to be able to add a filter that gives it, you know, sort of, you know, kind of a little bit of a sepia feel, or helps maybe smooth out some of those bags under the eyes type of things that we love Instagram for, makes perfect sense to me. And if you know, for anybody who's watching our video feed, the filters can be really, you know, it really stylizes something that otherwise is like, camera phone photo type of a thing. I love this. I think this is really smart.
And I think, you know, it puts Vimeo in a different light for me, because there was a point with me where I was thinking about Vimeo more as a service that would always be just sort of exclusive for people who wanted to do high-end videos and filmmakers, aspiring filmmakers, but wouldn't really become a service that went out there to the masses. But it seems like with these two recent announcements that they finally have an opportunity to get out there to a more general audience that will love these services, and it kind of gives them that hip factor, and I hope they continue to do stuff like this, because it's very cool.
I agree. You know, Amber, while we are talking, because the news never stops, there is by the time a lot of you see this, well, actually, by the time all of you see this, it's going to be a good 24 hours after we posted this show, because we're actually shooting the show a day early for reasons that are not important. Facebook has acquired a company Facebook is acquiring Atlas Advertiser Suite from Microsoft. This is interesting. After weeks of speculation and leaks, Facebook today announced it would buy the Atlas Advertiser Suite away from Microsoft. The Atlas team will stay in Seattle, but Facebook plans to invest in back-end scaling for better measurement to help advertisers close the loop and understand how their spend earns them money. This is really smart on Facebook's part. I mean, Facebook is all about figuring out how to monetize, particularly on mobile. And I'm not super familiar with what Atlas Advertiser Suite does that's better than some of its competitors, but this is priced to be less than $100 million. So, this is very interesting.
Yeah, it's a big deal. You know, I just got an email about this as well, and it's kind of hitting some of the different sites. And it looks like, based on some of the recent news that's come out, just explaining what Atlas does. So they let advertisers, like you mentioned, plan campaigns, buy ads, measure their impact across the web, including on Facebook and other social platforms. So I think you're right. It makes perfect sense for Facebook to team up with a company like this. And as a TechCrunch article says, and I don't think I could say it better, but basically kind of closing the ad spend loop for companies out there. So interesting to see this happen. No word on exactly how much they paid for it, but like Sarah said, less than $100 million, and could be in a range of anywhere from 30 to 50, who really knows, and I'm sure those details may or may not come out.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, back to our regularly scheduled news section. Foursquare has teamed up with Visa and MasterCard. Isn't that right, Amber?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. You know, a friend of mine, I don't know if we've had him on the show, Doug Stevens, he's a retail expert, and he's gotten me so much more interested in social as it applies to the retail space. So I'm following stories like this a lot more closely, and this one is kind of neat. So we've talked before about Twitter, for instance, having opportunities for advertisers to come on board. You get discounts if you're buying from certain companies using credit cards. Well, now Foursquare has partnered with Visa and MasterCard to give discounts when users shop. An example of this is right now there's a special at Burger King. that if you check in and you spend $10, you can save $1 using this new feature. So I think more and more this just is going to make sense for a lot of these companies. And Sarah, I know in the early days when we talked about Foursquare, you know, we'd always talked about the opportunity was there for people, for companies to have deals like this, but it never really materialized so much in the early days. But now we're seeing this kind of left, right, and center.
Yeah, yeah. This is. I love stuff like this because I'm a faithful Foursquare user, and half the time I really don't know why. I mean, I'm in this, I'm in sort of this, you know, this running sprint to try to become mayor of this coffee shop in an area of San Francisco that Om Malik, founder of GigaOm.com, is mayor of. He's way ahead of me, but it's like there are these silly little reasons that I use Foursquare, but none of that is really very helpful. What is helpful to me is deals. I like deals. And, you know, it's funny. This week, Groupon announced their third quarter earnings. It might be their fourth quarter. And they're really bad. You know, they're really bad. There's a lot of deal, you know, deals offering services that just don't seem to be figuring out their business model. It's not that people don't like saving money. It's just that there's too much of it. Something like Foursquare, where you can start to introduce deals for people like me who are loyal to sort of the fun of the app to begin with, is really smart because I'm already there and I will take advantage of this stuff.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. And I think, you know, when I've talked to you about Foursquare before on the show, you know, I've always mentioned how I don't use Foursquare a lot. But I have said, I think in the past, and we could probably look this up if we had a lot of time, a lot of hours. But I think I have said I would start using this when the deals were there. You know, so I don't check in right now because I maybe don't feel like it. And I feel like I don't want people to know where I am all the time, whatever it may be. But if all of a sudden I'm saving money, then there is more incentive there. And so I'm happy to see stuff like this as well. I think it's just a smart move, and it will just open doors to other opportunities, and it's just fun. That's what's so great about social right now, is everybody's experimenting and just trying to see what works.
I agree. And Foursquare is again, it's been around. I think you could sort of call Foursquare, you know, an app veteran at this point. I remember when Foursquare launched, and to this day, there's still the people who go, "Why would I want to tell anybody where I am?" You know, so there's still, you know, that part of it. But then this is a big company. They've got quite a few employees, several different offices in various cities around the world. And they're partnering up with Visa and MasterCard, two of the biggest credit card companies out there. So it's looking good for Foursquare. I don't see them going away anytime soon.
Mm-mm, not at all. All right. Now, I don't use this service, Waze. I think we've talked about it on the show before.
Yeah, and kind of crowdsourced traffic directions and being able to tell you, you know, if there's an accident up ahead or, you know, a road blockage or that sort of thing.
Yeah, quite popular in the Bay Area. And what's interesting, though, I thought about this article, and it's just perfect for the show, is just the idea that now this service will become even more accurate by allowing real-time updates from individuals who are using it. So basically, the community of people who love the tool, use it on a regular basis, have shown to be credible within the community on Waze, now will have the opportunity to put in more information about things like road closures, accidents, that type of information. So all of a sudden, traffic reports become less about that one person who's sitting in a TV newsroom trying to figure out everything for everyone in a big city, and more about individual pockets of people. So perfectly social. And I think, again, just a tool that shows the power of technology like this.
You know, I'm trying to figure out what exactly they're doing differently, because that's sort of the whole point of Waze, is to be able to give real-time updates on road closures or, you know, a flood or some sort of a detour. It sounds like, I guess they're giving you more sort of tools to provide more information on these updates. They can say how long they anticipate like a road closure lasting, or maybe some gridlock, that sort of thing. And that maybe the algorithm is getting more intelligent. I love Waze. I think Waze is a very, very interesting company because it's sort of like, I guess it's a little bit like Wikipedia. That's not a very good comparison, but, you know, obviously Wikipedia is something that the community is you know, it's sort of a, you know, the hive mind, right? The community is all able to add information to any Wikipedia entry. And it's a little bit like that with Waze. I mean, it's like, is there traffic? Well, I mean, if I'm sitting in it, it exists. And that's something that I can tell, you know, Leo about if he's 15 minutes behind me and we're friends on Waze, or even if we're not. So yeah, that's pretty cool. It's, it needs a little bit of, I think, UI polish. Leo and I both are like, it's not really the most good looking traffic app out there, but I mean, it's pretty accurate. So, I'm glad that it's getting smarter.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're trying to push more towards real time. Like, even though people could add that information, it just seems like they're pushing to get people to add that really much more quickly, maybe than they ever have before. Of course, that just, I have to bring this up because I think I immediately love it. But then I think about safety concerns with people feeling that pressure to be like, I'm going to be the first to spot this congestion, and then sitting on their phones in their cars, obviously not the safest thing to do. Nonetheless, hopefully they'll figure out a way to make it safer.
Yeah. We'll see. That's always been my issue too, is, especially, there was Waze ads that rolled out, gosh, I mean, probably about 6 months ago now. And the idea is that if you are on a route and there is maybe a restaurant on an exit that's nearby you, that would be something that would pop up on the app. And my first response was, well, but you'd have to look at your phone or your device in order to see that. That sounds terrible. You know, and then it's sort of like, yeah, you kind of have to get creative. I mean, do you pull over and look? Is it, you know, something that the passenger does? Do you not have a passenger in the car? So it certainly doesn't change the fact that everybody has to be very careful when driving and not be safe. Yes. If you're going to Waze while driving, well, you shouldn't. You should pull over.
Just like the guy who recorded the video for us, Sarah, when he was driving in his car, and we told him many weeks afterwards not to be doing that.
Right, exactly. Come on, we want you to stay with us and watch the show each week, so do not hurt yourself. A quick reminder that, like I said, we are taping the show a little bit at a strange time this week, but normally we record The Social Hour live every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Amber and I kind of love that time of day and that day of the week because it's Friday. You know, you're kind of ready to talk about all the social stuff that happened over the last week, and we try to keep it as fun as possible. If you ever miss a show, or if you want to go back and check one of the links to a story that we talked about or anything like that, you can always go to twit.tv/TSH. That is our show page. That's where all of our archives live. All of the information you need to subscribe to our show, video or audio feeds. You know, if you spend a lot of time in your car like I do, and you can't always watch, but you like to listen, we love to have you. And of course, each of our episodes is there. We've got that video embedded right there on the page when you do have time to watch. And all of the stuff that we talk about is listed in our link section on every episode page down there at the bottom. So you can always follow along and have quick links to share with your friends and the like. And of course, if you have feedback, and we'll get to some of your feedback a little bit later on the show, you can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. Amber, I am really excited to put some sunglasses on right now, and I know that this is a little unusual because we are indoors, but it's very relevant because we've got a new sponsor on The Social Hour, and that is Warby Parker, which is, this is actually really exciting to me because I've been a fan of Warby Parker, the brand, for a long time, so it's sort of like I'm a fan of the brand and they're a fan of us, so this is just really great. If you are unfamiliar with Warby Parker, I'm actually going to have to take these off because they're pretty dark. The idea is that they have taken the experience of buying yourself eyeglasses or sunglasses online. And you might say to yourself, well, hold on a second. I mean, buying glasses online, that's weird because you've got to, you know, it's a very personal thing, right? You have to make sure that they look good. You have to make sure that they fit. You have to make sure that they don't sit on your nose weird. And I'll get to why this is so cool in a second. But first, the glasses are very high quality. They're made with the same high quality materials that you're going to find in those boutique shops, those stores at the mall where the sunglasses or the eyeglasses, and, you know, God forbid you need a prescription. I mean, sunglasses are like $300 these days. It's crazy. Warby Parker glasses start at just $95. That is including prescription lenses, people. They have a titanium collection that starts at $145, also includes prescription lenses, Japanese titanium, French non-rocking screws. These are nice glasses. These are not cheapy glasses at all. They are great. All of the glasses include anti-reflective and anti-glare coating, a hard case, a little cleaning cloth. I've got my case right here in front of me. It's really nice. I mean, this is good quality. I've got my little cleaning cloth here. I use it all the time, actually, because, You know, I'm a smudgy person and I want to keep my glasses from not having smudges. But here's what's fun. So you say, all right, Sarah, you've sort of sold me on the quality of the glasses, but how do I know that they're going to be the ones that I want? These particular glasses I chose online, but I also was able to try them first because Warby Parker has this neat little offering they call Free Home Try-On. What you do is you go to the website and you say, yeah, I want to try on some glasses. You choose 5 styles and they send you these 5 styles in the mail with an easy shipping package information. So you can go ahead, choose the one that you like, send your free try-ons back, and then you get the glasses that you've already decided that you like. Now, my glasses, here are my glasses here. I decided of these 5 that I tried on that I liked them the best because I looked at them all, you know, and I asked people, do you like these or do you like, you know, something a little bit more aviator in general?
I like the aviator.
Do you? See, these looked terrible on me. And, you know, I liked them on the website. And then I tried them on and I went, you know, they're not me. And I had to do that or I would never have known. So this is a really, I mean, for an online site, they've really thought it through, you know, how to make the experience fun for folks. For every pair of glasses you purchase, by the way, Warby Parker, if you're not familiar with their business model, sends a pair to someone in need. They partner with nonprofits, like Vision Spring, in developing countries to help entrepreneurs and people who maybe couldn't afford eyeglasses otherwise. So that's pretty cool. Warby makes buying glasses really fun. It was fast. It was very easy and very painless. You know, I'm not crazy about going to sunglasses stores. This just makes a lot more sense to me. And they price the glasses low enough so that you can make them a fashion accessory. Now, you know, I can't buy more than, you know, one pair of $500 glasses every 5 years if I'm lucky. With Warby Parker, I can have a few different styles, you know, based on my mood. So be sure to check out the free home try-on at Warby Parker, just like I did. I tell you, it was easy. A few of us around the office did it, and it was a lot of fun trying on glasses and deciding which ones were best. And when you decide to purchase, enter the code SOCIALHOUR, and you will get expedited shipping. That's just our little gift to you. Again, that's warbyparker.com. And the code is SOCIALHOUR when you check out. Amber, you got some glasses as well, didn't you?
I did. I'm wearing them. You know, it's funny.
Those are
I was
so
just
cute.
Like, thank you. I was just ducking below my desk to take out my contacts because I thought it might gross people out who are watching the video if I took them out on camera. But yeah, I picked the IDs out and it was super fun because also you can do some measurements with your eyes to make sure that the glasses fit right, which I thought was awesome. I mean, I love anything that takes advantage of technology in your computer, like the web camera, especially when it has that component of shopping. And I thought I would go kind of fun and pick out the red frames. I've never had fun glasses before. They've always been more of something that I just sort of had as a backup sitting around if I didn't want to wear contacts. And I absolutely love them. So I'm going to wear them for this show because I don't want to take my, I don't want to put my contacts back in.
We don't want to see that. I have to take these glasses off just because they're great in the sun.
It's hard to see.
A little bit of a strain in the studio. Your glasses look really good. I'm not just saying that. You know, sometimes red frames, you know, sometimes it's
tough.
Like, yeah, it can be a little daring, but they look really good.
Yeah, they're really fun. So that was a ton of fun to do that. And I might have to order some more pairs, Sarah, I have to say.
I
could get into this thing.
I'm already trying to figure out what's going to be my next pair. So, yeah, thanks, Warby Parker. We love you. All right, let's move on to our spotlight of the week. This is something called Social Studios. And from what I hear, Amber, it turns my Facebook feed into a television show. God.
Oh, I know you're going to cringe, right? It is a little cringeworthy, I have to say. I found this on Shiny, and that's exactly what it does. It takes your Facebook feed, and it takes some of the top videos that people are watching, people's birthdays, and it puts them into a TV show. Now, this isn't a robot who is necessarily kind of speaking to you. It's a full-on like TV show with a real host, at least for part of it, who will announce things like, hey, welcome to your show. And the top videos watched these days are, and then, of course, you have the clips of those videos. So they're trying to use technology in a way to figure out what's popular among your friends. And I was going to hate it, like absolutely hate it. But it's an interesting idea. I mean, it's a little sexed up for me, but nonetheless, it could be fun if it was done in the right way, maybe.
Well, I mean, this is sort of like, okay, so we're looking at a cute girl who's on, you know, it looks like a bit of a, you know, Entertainment Tonight type of a set or, you know, some sort of a entertainment focused show. And she's basically tossing to, yeah, the videos that your friends would be sharing in your newsfeed. So this is stuff that you would be possibly clicking on anyway. And it's, I guess, giving you that personalized content that we all think in theory would be really cool. You know, I mean, it'd be great if I could personalize my half hour news magazine show to actually be stuff that I want to see. But how do you do that? So this is, I mean, of course, it's taking data from Facebook. So you have to like that portion of it, or at least I guess you have to like what your friends are sharing. But
yeah,
it also seems a little like almost too formulaic, right? Because the host can't really say anything that's going to make you feel like she's talking to you. She has to speak generally enough so that it flows for everybody.
Yeah, I guess what I thought was kind of fun about it, though, is that it's so easy to watch television like shows that are kind of like this, that format, like you mentioned, Entertainment Tonight, so very fast snippets, right? So I just imagine, you know, maybe this isn't the answer, but that idea that instead of like sitting and sifting through my Facebook feed, that it could be compiled together into like a, you know, a 5-minute show that I could put on while I was getting ready in the morning. I mean, I'm more interested in what my friends are doing than what Lindsay Lohan is doing. So
sure. In
that respect, I thought it's kind of a fun concept because the data's there, like you said, right? It's about getting it into a format that is watchable and is not robotic. Because I think that's a problem with some of these services that have been similar, but they try to make it more like an actual slick TV show.
Yeah, I think if you like that style of TV show, then this is probably like, ooh, this is kind of cool. If you don't like that style of TV show, I think you'd be turned off right away. I mean, because it's a little bit of that like, whoosh, whoosh, you know, e-entertainment sort of a format thing. So some people are going to be like, I don't like that. But I kind of like the style. So,
yeah, it's very easy. It's very easy to consume, right? You know, it's simple, it's fast paced, and all of those other things. So, they could be onto something here, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, you know, kudos to them for giving us a personalized show from our Facebook feed. Who would have thunk even a year ago that we would get to that point? Hey, so I mentioned that we were going to talk, get some feedback from many of our viewers and listeners. This is always my favorite part of the show, besides your rad or fad, Amber, of course, because we get to hear back from people. We did get a voicemail from a lovely lady across the pond about doing it live.
Hi Sarah and Amber, my name is Marie and I'm calling from England. I was just wondering if you or any of the Social Hour viewers have any tips for live tweeting at an event. My company has a famous guest speaker coming to give a presentation and I've been asked to live tweet it from the corporate account. Thanks for your help and love the show.
Well, it is a good question. You know, it's funny, Amber. I actually participated in a live tweet, sort of like a moderator chat session earlier today, and it wasn't Twit related. It was for an interview that I had done recently with a Forrester analyst on the concept of big data, and I have to say it was disorganized because Twitter is a hard place to have a conversation with a bunch of different people. Always has been. I mean, there's message threading and that sort of thing, but I've always found it really disjointed. Do you have tips for Marie on live tweeting and how to make that compelling if they've got, yeah, so she didn't say who it was, but some, you know, person that's, you know, in a celebrity sense that's going to be involved with her company?
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it can be a little bit messy when you try to do it. And I've been to enough events and I know, you know, it can be good for some people and then overwhelming to other people who are following you and don't want to follow along. I can't think of anything that maybe she hasn't already thought about, but I think you do have to be as organized as possible and just plan it out. And what I mean by that is you got to announce things like the hashtag you're going to use, make sure that you embed the conversation on a website somewhere, make sure maybe even that you warn your followers that, hey, this event is happening. I'm going to be live tweeting on this day, just so they have a sense of that influx of all of the different messages that are going to come through and they won't be annoyed by them. So I think those type of things. And then other than that, I say you just have to be fast. Like I've done live tweeting from events before and I cannot believe how quick people are. You know, I think I'm a pretty fast typer typing something out and all of a sudden person beside me has been that much, done it that much more quickly. So I just, you know, you got to be kind of on it and be dedicated to the stream. Have one person kind of sitting there at a computer ready to capture anything, retweet anything, and those type of things to make it as valuable as possible.
Yeah. Also, the celebrity or the VIP person that you're talking about if they can retweet the accounts. You know, that's always sort of a delicate thing, right? Is you want people who have a large following to spread the word when they're involved with your company, in a sense. You know, here at Twit, when we have a guest that's on any of our shows, you know, the more that they can share with their following, the more the people who might not be familiar with their programming hear about us, and everybody wins. But it can, that can be sort of a delicate conversation, can't it? Because you want them to do what, you know, you want them to do, but you don't want to push.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And you know what? You know, so maybe Twitter isn't the right tool. Like, maybe you have to use more of a chat-like tool. Maybe that will be better for more meaningful conversations, because I don't know what the event is exactly, but maybe, you know, maybe it's not Twitter. Maybe you want to think about different technology based on what you're trying to achieve. Because Twitter can be very, it's very limited in terms of what you can do.
It's limited by, if you've got a thought, you've got to figure out how to compact it, or you have to say, like, this is tweet one of four type of a thing, and, you know, continue your paragraph. And I think something like Google Plus makes a lot more sense. Maybe you use Twitter as a place to just broadcast that, hey, this conversation is going to be happening over here, or even like a live blog type of a thing. But Marie, hopefully we've given you at least some options and some stuff to think about. Amber, I mentioned when we were talking about Foursquare earlier that, you know, Groupon had a pretty messy quarter. Their latest financials are abysmal. CEO Andrew Mason is no longer CEO. This
crazy.
Just in, yeah, during the show. Again, you guys are going to see this, you're going to say, that's day-old news, but it was live right now when we were taping the show.
Yeah,
it's happening now.
It's crazy.
It's very interesting. Crazy day for social. Groupon.
It is.
All right, we got a couple of emails, and they contrast each other very nicely. Do you want to read the first one, Amber? I'll take the second one.
Okay, so I'll do the one from Tom. Does that make sense for
you? Yeah, do the one from Tom.
Okay, so Tom says, I enjoyed watching episode 99 today in your segment where you had your YouTube video guest talk about talking to camera. Of course, that was Steve Garfield. I was reminded of all the exercises I did for my high school public speaking class. One of the tasks that I took on for that was speaking from an outline instead of a script. These are the points I want to cover, and I can do those in a more natural voice while looking at my audience. If I am just occasionally glancing at my notes to make sure I have said what I want to say. Just my two cents on that subject. And this is from Tom from Anaheim, California. A very good tip. I mean, I think that does take practice. Some people aren't comfortable with that, but I'm a huge fan of just having bullets that I want to hit. And I think that's a smart way to be able to talk to camera if you're comfortable enough getting to that point. Just make sure that you know, you have your notes nearby and you're not reading them too much. That's how I will add to that.
I agree. When I first started doing TV, Amber, back in the tech TV days, I was terrified, and it was really, really difficult. And what I wanted to do was just write out, you know, everything I wanted to say verbatim. And my boss made me only use bullet points because he wanted me to know what I was saying. You know, he's like, you have to you want to talk to the audience and you're sort of showing them how to do something, right? Like, I was like really into registry edits at one point. So it's like, these are the steps. And if you just write it out and you talk, you're going to sound like a robot. And the whole point is to be, is to not just make people believe that you know what you're talking about, but it forces you to speak in your own natural language. And that's really helpful, especially for our line of work. And I agree with Tom. I think that it keeps things feeling very real and genuine. On the flip side, we got another email from Lance who says, speaking of social video formats, I am sensitive to you girls using the word like way too much. We were like watching them. I was like talking to this person. He says, seems like this is something the younger generation, especially females, has an issue with. You also say I mean a lot. He says, in fact, all the hosts on Twit have problems flowing their sentences without adding I mean between thoughts. He says, one more. Try to practice not ending sentences in so. I didn't know we did that, but okay. The content and netcast format on Twit TV is amazing compared to traditional broadcasts. It's so easy to be critical, and I know that I would probably not have the on-camera composure that many of you have. That said, do yourself a favor, replay episode 99 and count the likes. Lance.
Could be a drinking game, Sarah.
I know. Let's make it fun. Well, Lance has a point. But that's also, that's sort of part of this whole, we don't have a script here, Amber. We've got little bullet points. We know what we want to talk about in general on the show. And the rest of it is just the way we talk, good and bad. But I think that there's the authenticity that I wouldn't want to get rid of.
I think, too, now I'm very sensitive of every single word that I say.
I know.
But I think also because we do have an hour and most Twitch shows, you know, they're not necessarily exactly to time. You're just more comfortable in letting things be a little looser. Whereas if you know, if you're in traditional TV, like I do TV hits all the time. I know, Sarah, you've done a lot of TV in the past. And you know, you have to get rid of those extra words. But we all have words that we use as crutches. I mean, I think I've mentioned in this before, I used to say actually all the time. Actually, like every fifth word. And I think you go from one crutch to the next one. But it's always good to know and good to watch yourself back and see what you do. A lot of that could be irritating. So I'll be watching 99.
Me too. Not really. I don't like watching myself. No, I will. I will. I will for you, Lance. Just this once. Hey, we got a video, Amber, from Laura Killian, who I know that you, you have a working and a personal relationship with her.
I do. So she is my co-host on Command N, so the video podcast that we've done forever. And she stepped in to be a co-host on that show, I think about a year or two ago. And she's fabulous, so into social. I think she's watched almost every episode of The Social Hour. I don't want to steal her thunder in this video, but she is also dating my brother, who is also a co-host. So yes, it's sort of all in the family, and she's awesome.
Well, she sent us a nice video. So Laura, you're cute. Take it away.
Hi, Amber and Sarah. This is Lara calling in from Halifax, Nova Scotia to say congratulations on reaching the 100 episode milestone for The Social Hour. I've seen most of those episodes and I'm looking forward to the next 100, so keep up the good work.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you. That is so nice.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Very cute. Like I said, your brother's a lucky man.
He is. And she, honestly, I feel, you know, when I'm talking to her, I feel as much as I'm into social, I know that she's into it even more so. And almost from an academic standpoint, I mean, it's really interesting talking to her because it's like she studies some of the news that's happening and she really has a good handle on what's going on in the social media space. So always fun. And I, you know what, Sarah, I love getting videos from people. It's just awesome.
Too.
It kind of rounds out our show, right?
It definitely does. Speaking of videos, the Oscars, the Academy Awards, for anybody who's not familiar, it's those Hollywood, I don't know. I don't know what you want to call it. I love it. Some people don't like award shows where actors pat each other on the back. It's one of my favorite events of the year. And there was sort of a breakout star of the Oscars over this last year.
Yeah, definitely. And Jennifer Lawrence is that breakout star. And it wasn't necessarily just Jennifer Lawrence at the Oscars that night. She did have that fall. But some of the interviews she did afterwards as well, I've seen clips of her where she ends up chatting and flirting with Jack Nicholson. Well, now there are, of course, Jennifer Lawrence Oscar memes and poses where she's, you know, maybe she's fallen down on the steps right before she's accepting her award. And the list of things goes on and on. She's so charming and so adorable. I haven't seen any of her movies, but she's pretty cute. I've enjoyed kind of watching some of the clips of her being interviewed and making reporters look not so smart.
Oh, I love her. Yeah, she's great. She's breath of fresh air, I guess, is maybe the what comes to mind, because you get these actors and actresses. I think this is the reason that people go like, oh, Hollywood stars, you know, because they take themselves really seriously, you know, and there's this method acting and, oh, I lost so much weight for the role and, oh, yes, oh, my job. And Jennifer Lawrence is just kind of like, yeah, I fell because I'm wearing this ridiculous dress. And, yeah, you know, I'm really happy that I got Best Actress and I'm really young and I'm, you know, I mean, she's really adorable, but she kind of comes across as like a really normal person. And so everybody likes a, you know, a normal actor, even as beautiful as they are, wearing, you know, something really expensive, accepting a big gold statue.
Yes, and of course, being turned into a meme. That's when you know you've really made it. It has nothing to do with the statue she received, Sarah. She's been turned into a meme, so she's reached that level of importance, at least on the internet. But that's been kind of fun. You know, none of them I've seen have been really mean or anything like that.
No.
But just more poking fun at her, kind of, you know, like she's a little bit aloof, right? And it's just been fun to kind of watch her, and she's very, very well-liked. So hopefully she stays in that position for some time now.
If anybody finds a Jennifer Lawrence Oscar meme that we simply must see, you have a few different ways that you can get a hold of us. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail, as Marie did, at 2626-SOCIAL. So that's 2626 S-O-C-I-A-L. Or you can record a video, upload it somewhere, like Laura did. I think she sent us a YouTube. Yeah. She just put the video on YouTube, sent us the link so we don't have to open an attachment and we can see your smiling face. And thanks to everybody in advance for all of your great feedback. I know that you're going to give us some over the next week. All right, Amber, it is time now, as we wind down the show, for your Rad or Fad.
All right. And before I say that, because I know Laura, it's Laura, not Laura. And I just have to tell you that, Sarah, in case she writes us in.
Did I say Laura? Because I know it's Laura.
Okay, you might have said Laura. I'm just letting her know because now I know that we have to be careful about what we say. Now I'm on edge.
No, it's true. I know another Laura who, it's probably a very common mistake people make, but she's there's no you. It's different. Different name.
I know.
So
it is.
I am sensitive to the Laras out there.
Okay, so now this is just weird, and I haven't tested it out because I don't want to because I think it's kind of bizarre. For our Rad or Fad this week, I wanted to talk about a service called Star Pilot, and you know what? I'm going to be totally honest with you. I don't even know if it's real. I don't even know if it works, but this is how it's supposed to work, and supposedly it is real. Basically, you use Star Pilot on Twitter, and someone who uses Star Pilot, they would star favorite one of your tweets, okay? Once they favorite one of your tweets, you sign into Star Pilot, and you have a credit for their account. And what I mean by that is you have the ability to go and post a message on Twitter on their account that appears on their timeline without them ever knowing it. So you get credits to post on other people's Twitter accounts based on favorites that they've given you through Star Pilot.
How could they not know, though? How could they not know that you've tweeted from their account?
Well, they would know. They wouldn't have to approve it. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Okay,
right.
So it's just bizarre. I don't even know where I found this. It's not like it's getting a ton of attention.
It's kind of a weird site. It's like,
It's just weird.
Sort of strange.
Course, and I know that we like to test things out on the Social Hour because obviously we want to make sure that things are interesting that we mention. But on the other hand, I didn't really want to sign up because I don't really want to give anyone the ability to do that, to post on my timeline.
Well, you've got to authorize Star Pilot. So I guess, obviously, if I authorize Star Pilot and you don't, I can't just tweet on your account.
No. You both have to be using it, right?
So you
have to be, you have to have a mutual consent as far as being involved in the Star Pilot process. I don't even know why you would ever want to do this, Sarah.
I think the idea is if I really like the sort of tweets that you are sending out on a regular basis, then I might like you to speak for me. And then there's a little bit of like, well, what would she say? But I don't think that this is well thought out concept at all, because I try to think of like the things that I favorite. See, I don't use Twitter in the right way for this at all, because I just favorite things that I want to come back to later. They're completely bookmarks. It's not you were funny or you said something clever. It has nothing to do with that. It's, oh, I want to remember this and I don't have time to look at it now. So I'm not a very good test case. But if I were to favorite a particular kind of tweet, it would probably be in that sort of like clever, funny realm, like, this is just, kudos to you type of thing. But then that doesn't necessarily mean that when they tweet on my account that it would be the same. I don't like this at all.
I don't know. And I'm not, just because this is a ratified segment doesn't mean that we're recommending it. And in fact, I think maybe it's a weird fad. And I think that weird fad is not just necessarily just Star Pilot, but it's this craze. And I touched on this in the conversation in episode 99, that people, they almost have to create something that is so weird and bizarre to get attention these days, because otherwise you can't stand out in all of the digital noise. And this is just one example of that. And of course, I fell for it and I read it, but I still think it's a fad.
Yeah, this is totally a fad. And you're right. It's like Star Pilot itself is not even, I don't even think it's at fad level. But it's like, let's use Twitter in weird ways. That whole thing is a bit of a fad.
It is.
We're still trying to, as we said sort of earlier in the show, it's like companies, brands, you've got a lot of let's figure out how this all works for us going on. But Star Pilot is not the answer.
And I think the lesson here for everybody is you never give anyone access to post on your Twitter account. That is just like, giving them the keys to your car. I mean, this is all an extension of you in many ways, and can be so damaging if someone ever posted something there that obviously you didn't like and you think it goes away, but of course lasts there for longer than you would like. So it's a weird one this week.
Yep. Star Pilot. Fad all the way down. Well, Amber, this has been an interesting 100th episode. We've got some good feedback. We got some videos. We got voicemails from England. We talked about Andrew Mason was outed as Groupon CEO during this hour. I mean, this has been kind of a wild ride. But 100 episodes, happened. You know, congrats to us. It's been really
fun. Yes, congratulations to us and all the people who have listened and watched and kind of grown with us because, you know, we just keep, you know, switching it up as time goes on with the show. So
right.
Thanks for sticking with us and hopefully for 100 more.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is it on that note for this episode of The Social Hour. 100 episodes down, everybody. Thanks for coming along for the ride. Remember that we are usually live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. We love to have you watch live because you're chatting with us and you're giving us real-time feedback. It's a lot of fun. But remember, if you ever miss a show or you can't watch us live or you want to subscribe to the show, which is totally free, of course, you can get all those links to do so at twit.tv/TSH or, you know, watch a show again. Episode 99, count the likes. If you're going to make it a drinking game, have somebody take away your keys because I think you're going to be pretty loaded by the end of the hour. all right. Next week, we will be back at the regular. Actually, are we not going to be there? Yeah, I think we might have a weird week next week. Doesn't matter. We'll keep the Twit calendar updated. Until then, I am going to be Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we will see you soon.